Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's time for the Israel Report, which is proudly brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, a very good morning to you.
Chad, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, nice to be back. And of course, it's almost impossible to start talking about anything these days without referring to the death of the Queen. And it's interesting just to have a look at the relationship of the late Queen and the royal family in general with Israel. We understand that Israeli President Isaac Herzog will represent Israel at the Queen's funeral, which is due to take place early next week. But it was also interesting to note that in the 70 years that she was on the throne, the Queen never visited Israel. And it's an interesting question to ask why that is, given the extent of her travels in general. Just take an example. Apparently, she visited Canada no fewer than 27 times during the period of her reign. So why is it that the Queen never visited Israel? And I would say that at least in the early years of her reign, the British Foreign and Commonwealth Office very strongly recommended against visits by members of the royal family, in particular the Queen, to Israel, because at least at that time, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office were very closely associated with the Arab world in general. They had very close relations with the Arab world, and I think that there was a certain fear that they would damage their relations with the Arab world and, of course, with oil-producing countries, perhaps more specifically, by allowing the Queen to visit Israel. But in later years, I think that that whole kind of Arab focus that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office showed was significantly diluted, and yet the Queen never visited Israel. King Charles has visited Israel at least twice that I can recall. He attended the funeral of late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. He also attended the funeral of Israel's late President Shimon Peres, also was a Prime Minister but went on to be the President, and used the opportunity of the visit to Shimon Peres's funeral to also visit the grave of his paternal grandmother. And she is interred on the Mount of Olives in the Russian Orthodox Church of Gethsemane, which is at the foot of the Mount of Olives. So the current British king's grandmother is buried in Jerusalem. And therein lies quite an interesting discussion that we may wish to hold about what that means for particularly the Palestinian Authority moving forward and its relationship with the royal family, because the area of Gethsemane where the king's grandmother is buried is, of course, an area that the Palestinian Authority call East Jerusalem, and they lay claim to that area as the capital of a potential future Palestinian state, and they would regard the burial of the king's grandmother and, in fact, her aunt, the king's grandmother's aunt, also buried at that location, to be something of an intrusion on the situation. So it just all makes for some quite interesting politics in terms of the relationship with the royal family and Israel in general, Palestinian Authority as well. Of course, it's also interesting to note that King Charles's grandmother was declared by Yad Vashem as somebody who had assisted Jews during the Holocaust, and she is one of the righteous amongst the nations, officially declared by Yad Vashem. This is the current British king's grandmother. So whereas she was buried here as the mother-in-law of the former queen, she is now a blood relative of the king of the UK, King Charles III. Just some interesting information as we move forward during this period before the Queen is buried.
Extremely interesting that, and his paternal grandmother led a very strange life. Towards the end of her life, she did, of course, become a nun, and we saw her in the various processions, a soul figure walking. A lot of people didn't actually know who she was. A very interesting dynamic, the late Philip's mother, and of course the current king's grandmother. And thank you for bringing that to our listeners' attention. It was very fascinating. I myself didn't know about it. But moving swiftly along, the news coming out of Israel is that the Zionist Spirit faction was dissolved yesterday, and Ayelet Shaked is rumored to have already formed a new alliance. Can you tell us what lies behind these changes, Anthony?
Well, we may remember that only a few weeks ago, Ayelet Shaked and her party formed an alliance called the Zionist Spirit, Haruach HaTzioni in Hebrew, the Zionist Spirit, with the Derech Eretz faction, which is led by Yoaz Hendel. So that was formed a couple of weeks ago. And the idea behind the two parties getting together was really that both of them risked the possibility of not succeeding to make the minimum electoral threshold to allow them to get seats in the Knesset after the upcoming November the 1st election. So Ayelet Shaked, who is the leader of the Yamina party, and Yoaz Hendel, who is the leader of the Derech Eretz faction, were both concerned that they wouldn't make the 3.25% minimum threshold to get seats, and they joined together to form this faction called Haruach HaTzioni, the Zionist Spirit. Well, yesterday, the Zionist Spirit became very dispirited because it effectively fell apart even before the election has taken place. And only 4 days before the final lists have got to be determined before the upcoming election. And we understand that the reason behind the Zionist Spirit falling apart is because Ayelet Shaked seems to be absolutely determined to go into a government with Likud leader Benjamin Netanyahu, whereas Yoaz Hendel would rather go to another round of elections than allow his faction to join a coalition headed up by Netanyahu. So they had a fundamental difference about what they would do if they were called upon, or if they were invited to participate in a coalition led by Netanyahu that potentially could form a government, whereas Ayelet Shaked was very firmly in the camp of joining Netanyahu, Yoaz Hendel decided that under no circumstances would he be willing to do it. And it's quite an interesting discussion to hold about which is the high road to take here. On the one hand, we've got Yoaz Hendel, who was trying to stick to his political principles and saying, I am not somebody who can support Netanyahu. And even if it means that we could form a government rather than to go to another round of elections, I would not wish to form a government which is comprised of Netanyahu as the leader, therefore as the prime minister. So he's trying to stick to his political principles. Ayelet Shaked is saying, look, it's very, very costly for the country to continuously go to elections. We already saw that last time around, where we ran into so many different elections because no party was able to form a government. It's better for Israel to have a government that's headed up by somebody who you don't necessarily fully support than to force the country to continue without any elected Knesset and without any government being formed, and just to go to future rounds of elections. And it's interesting to know what the listeners out there might think about those two conflicting points of view. I'm certainly not sure as to which I think is the better of those two very, very negative kind of options. But I can understand both points of view. And interestingly, now the news has broken that Ayelet Shaked seems to be on the verge of forming a relationship with the Bayit HaYehudi party, which is headed up by Brodny. He is somebody who's not particularly well known. He's the current mayor of Givat Shmuel, Yossi Brodny, and he heads up the party which is called Bayit HaYehudi. it's a religious party, and he wishes Ayelet Shaked to join him again in order to try to secure the future of both of those parties, that they may be able together to pass the electoral threshold rather than both of them fail and whatever votes are given to them effectively wasted in the process. Yossi Broadney himself, even though he is the mayor of Givat Shmuel, is not a particularly well-known figure on the international political stage. So it comes as no surprise that he's given up the first seat to Ayelet Shaked, and he himself has taken the second seat. But I still have some doubts as to whether this combined faction will actually even achieve the electoral threshold. Yossi Broadney has encouraged Ayelet Shaked to join him and to be a little bit more religious, to try and to strengthen the whole modern orthodox element of the party that he represents. We still don't have an official announcement about the formation of this faction, but it is expected to be announced later today.
Sure, lots of things that are happening. Of course, there's always the question mark of terror that hangs over everything that's happening. And again, Israeli security officers have arrested a man who was planning what's been termed a major terror attack in Israel. What more has been made known about this?
Well, it's an interesting sequence of events that took place on Thursday, because from what I can gather, the arrest of this individual, which was made in Jaffa, right next to the famous Jaffa clock tower. For those people who have visited Jaffa, I have little doubt that you've seen the clock tower that's right in the middle of Jaffa, almost at the entrance as you come from the Tel Aviv side. And apparently, the security forces officers, special forces officers, were in Jaffa at the time, patrolling as they do, when they discovered this individual who seemed suspicious to them, and they approached him. And during the course of their questioning and their examination of the bag that he had, they discovered that he was carrying a makeshift rifle, and he was also carrying some pipe bombs in his bag, which potentially could have done some significant damage if it had been allowed, if he had been allowed to continue to carry out the attack that he apparently admitted to the fact that he was planning to carry out. So this is a person who was found, I think, on the spur of the moment. It seems as if though this was just two special patrol officers who were patrolling the area and whose eyes and ears were open and who looked at a situation and suspected that there was something going on. I don't think that there was any intelligence involved in tracking this individual down. And when they eventually had a look into his bag and discovered the weaponry that was contained in his bag, a pipe bomb containing nails and this makeshift rifle, which could have done a lot of damage, apparently he then admitted to the fact that he was looking for a more crowded area in order to carry out his attack, which of course is quite a scary thing to consider. But also great credit to the officers who were on the ground and whose eyes and ears were so wide open and so attentive to the events that were going on around them, sufficient enough for them to look at this individual to say, he looks a little suspicious, his behavior is not what we would expect. He has this bag which looks a little out of the ordinary for somebody who's touring around Jaffa. And they went in and arrested him. It turns out that he is somebody who has already been arrested before for carrying a knife on the Temple Mount. And so he is somebody who is known to the security services. And then, of course, intelligence kicked in, and apparently they discovered that he might have had some assistance, and there was some intelligence work going on and some security forces work going on in order to try to arrest the other individual or individuals who might have been assisting and involved in this particular incident. So this is really an accident that was waiting to happen, and very, very great work being done by our security services. And just, you know, in linking to that particular fact, the head of the Shin Bet, Ronen Bar, was talking about Iran's influence of creating terror in Israel. And he went on to say that the Shin Bet, the internal security agency in Israel, has managed to foil what he termed more than 300 significant terror attacks in Israel so far this year. That means something like two every single day, two potential attacks foiled every single day. And he terms them significant attacks. I don't know exactly what they would consider to be significant in terms of potential attacks and how those could have been foiled, but it just goes to show that unfortunately terror is alive and well and living in our part of the world. And thankfully we have the Shin Bet and we have people who are very, very wide awake, and we have great intelligence who are able to make sure that we can live a relatively normal, safe, secure and healthy life. And in the most part, we really managed to do that. So we're very much grateful to these people who do such a great job in making sure that we can, lead what is a relatively normal and safe existence here.
And Anthony, with just a couple of minutes to spare, our last insert today, an Israeli woman was sent to jail for refusing to accept a divorce from her husband. On what basis was this decision made to imprison her?
So Jewish law has Jewish law, which governs marriage and divorce in Israel. We don't have the concept of civil marriage and divorce. It's all done under halacha, under Jewish law. And Jewish law requires that a man of his own will offers to divorce his wife, and that the wife of her own free will agrees to accept the divorce in order for a divorce to be valid. Now, we have this concept of women who wish to get divorced from their husbands and whose husbands withhold the divorce from them, the Jewish divorce, which is known as a get. Husbands withhold the divorce from them. And then we have this whole concept of chained, what they call chained women, agunot in Hebrew, women who wish to be divorced and whose husbands will simply not allow them to get divorced. And there are consequences in Israel for men who refuse to divorce their wives. Men are very much encouraged, in inverted commas, to offer their wives divorce where it's clear to the courts and those involved in the case that there is
Anthony,
no possible reconciliation.
We've just got 30 seconds. Why was she imprisoned?
So she was imprisoned simply because she refused to accept the divorce from him. And this is a first situation of such an event happening where the courts decided that she should be accepting the divorce. She refused to do so. He feels disadvantaged because he feels that no other woman would wish to marry him because he is still married. And so she has been sent to prison for a year by a religious court in Israel, the very first time that that's happened. And it's a very, very interesting discussion to hold.
And it shows us
Jewish law on divorce.
What an equal society Israel is. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Thank you, Anthony. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time. It's now time for the news headlines.